Welcome to the Mina Kime Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts eats stuffing and the other one removes it from his toys. Happy week 13. Happy Tuesday. Happy Thanksgiving, almost. I want to start this podcast off by saying what I'm thankful for, which is Lamar Jackson. Mike, do you feel the same way?
The gift that keeps on giving over and over again till the end of time. I saw Dominique Foxworth tweet this. We got Patrick Mahomes last year and Lamar Jackson this year. We don't deserve this nice of things, Mina.
I know. And Russell Wilson all the years. I mean, yeah. No, I agree. I mean, it is really amazing that we have this kind of new golden age of quarterbacking as a lot of sort of the older elite quarterbacks are sort of nearing the end of the road, which I'm trying to figure out a way to say that doesn't make it sound like they're dying, but I say near the end of their NFL lives. It is remarkable. And I want to talk to you, Mike, a little bit about the Monday Night Football beatdown that we witnessed. But first, a little housekeeping. Today, we're doing a very special Thanksgiving episode of the Mina Kime Show. And as my way of saying thank you to you, the listeners, we're going to do a mega mailbag. We're going to get through some questions from iTunes reviews. You guys leave the best questions, by the way. We took some on Twitter. So we're not doing a mailbag today. The whole thing is just going to be great football questions. We chose some of my favorites. And then in lieu of dinks and dunks, Lenny will answer some questions at the end of the show in his own voice.
Yes. Thank you for bringing back the king in his rightful form. God, it feels good to be on this pod.
I know. I feel like you're the right guest for this one in particular. Mike, before we get to the questions, I want to talk about last night's game. There's not like a ton. It feels, Dominique mentioned the Mahomes thing. It does feel like that point in the season we reached last year with Mahomes where it's like, what do we even say about this guy at this point? Because, you know, what he's doing is so impressive and so historical in a lot of ways. But let me ask you, what surprised you or interested you from the game on Monday?
I mean, I think taking what is still a pretty good Rams defense and essentially rendering most of its meaningful parts completely useless.
Yes.
Like, Jalen Ramsey has been an interesting case study since he came over. I think I heard last night he's giving up like 75% completion percentage coming his way, which seems like an outlier. But Aaron Donald, like, if you're looking for a way, and we've had this conversation that we had about how to stop, you know, Lamar Jackson, about Aaron Donald for a lot of years because he's been a guy that's been so heavily double teamed and fought against and all that stuff. The best way to stop him is to pass like two times a drive the way the Ravens did. Like, until they got down in the red zone, they didn't really have to worry about trying to pass and pass protect. And even then, you're throwing big body double teams at him on a lot of these play action shots that they do down by the end zone. It rendered one of the best, if not the best, defensive player in football almost completely useless for most of that game. And it was mind blowing to watch play in and play out.
That's a great point. This Rams defense is good. That's what's crazy about what we watch, right? It wasn't a dismantling of an average defense, to say nothing of how good they've been over the last few weeks. I mean, that unit has carried the team this year. And you're right, the game plan was perfection. The way they neutralized Aaron Donald, who, you know, he's always double teamed, right? But, you mentioned their game plan. I also noticed a lot. They were really attacking the edge rushers, Clay Matthews, Dante Fowler, taking advantage of his aggression at times, even though he was the one, he did get to Ebukam and him got to the quarterback a few times. And also, they really weren't throwing at Jalen most of the game, which also a good idea. It's incredible to think, by the way, you know, Greg Roman, I don't want to be that person who says Lamar Jackson just had this magical performance. Let's talk about Greg Roman, because Greg Roman would be able to do none of this if not for Lamar's incredibly multiple skill set. But you got to think, after watching what you just described, this game plan that was so smart and sophisticated, he's going to get some looks at head coach next year.
Absolutely. And this is what we talk about with new age NFL head coaches when we've been searching and reaching for all these offensive minds, which is who is willing to build around the thing that they have. And the Ravens all decided collectively to build around this special thing. I saw you retweet a great article. Just the uniform buy-in from top to bottom is something that I think Greg Roman would be able to speak to if he were a head coach at another place, saying, we took this holistic approach to when we drafted this quarterback about supporting all the things that he does well. And I think bringing that along, the same way we talk about Sean McVay as a leader of men, not just a mind, I think Greg Roman as being someone who has understand and seen that play out now twice would certainly be able to lend some of that, and I think that would be hugely appealing.
The McVay thing is also interesting to me, Mike, because we were asked about the Rams on Highly Questionable today, and, you know, is he a fraud? Because that's how the questions are phrased on that show. And I was watching last night, and I think that it's really unfair to criticize him for a lot of the mistakes his players are making, quite frankly, right? It's not that he hasn't come up with some counters, and you've seen some innovation from the Rams offense. It's just that they're not really executing. But that said, I was struck by one thing in this game in particular, not only, you know, his inability, I think, to, or the inability rather of the offense to do anything against a very good Ravens defense, but there was that moment when they were down 29 points, I want to say, and he punted on 4th and 2. And that to me deserves more criticism than anything else in this game. Like, just the absolute contrast in identities between these two teams right now. Now, you could say, yes, well, he doesn't have faith in this offense, I guess, to get those 2 yards. But it was after that, too, that Lamar waved off the kicker. I think it was 4th and 3 or 4th and 4, and they went for it, and he hit Boykin. And just the contrast between those two decisions, I think, really speaks to the different places that these two teams are in right now.
Exactly. Well, and it's one team who was, quite frankly, exactly where the other used to be. Like, we saw the Rams doing a lot of these same confident, offensive, forward-thinking things. And so to see them so broken right now, and it's broken at the foundation, Mina. Like, you saw this team in the preseason, and you saw an offensive line that was already getting old, that is now injured up front, that was really the backbone that this entire thing was built on. But then on top of that, Robert Woods has missed time with personal reasons. Cooks and Cooper Kupp have both been injured at different points. Like, there's been no leg to stand on with all that. And at some point, you don't excuse it, but you can understand really just a lack of confidence in anything. They were searching for answers all over the place, just drowning.
All right, well, the Ravens are the best team in the NFL. I already said that last week. I think they reaffirmed that last night. I'm extremely excited for the Niners-Baltimore matchup on Sunday, really the game of the year right now. It's a shame that it can't get flexed, but we're not going to talk about that. We're going to take some questions. And the first one I want to start with is from Stu DaBaker, 2013, great name. He asks, do you think Wentz's struggles this year are a sign of any real regression or just another display of how having a complete dearth of surrounding talent can torpedo a quarterback's performance, e.g. Dak prior to the Coop signing? Mike, what do you think?
It's always the cop-out answer with Dak or with Carson, but I feel like it's both right now. Like, a little dinged up. We saw the hand injury there. He is, I think, for a long time, wowed us with his ability to do the spectacular thing, right? Like, Carson has always had special abilities, and we get enamored with those and what their potential might be, and we got a real taste of that the season before he got hurt towards the postseason when he was a viable MVP candidate. And now, not only has that come back down to earth a bit, but yeah, all the, you know, parts around him fell apart too, so it's got to be a combination of both. I don't know if there's another more accurate way to really look at it.
No, you're right. I mean, the injuries, you know, in the Seattle game, I mean, every wide receiver was out, I believe. And then obviously they lost a couple linemen. Darren Sproles is on injured reserve. Jordan Howard went out. I mean, it's incredibly stark. I read somewhere they were missing more than half of their starters on offense from the beginning of the season. But Carson was just sailing screens, right? It's the kind of thing, a game where when you hear your quarterback was injured, you're actually happy because you're like, okay, maybe that explains some of it. Although, you know, his footwork looked really off. I think the absence of those receivers, it really hurts them because there's just, they look, the guys who are out there just look so slow. And there's just no fear of them getting downfield in time for him to go deep. But there's also, I mean, he's not even able to connect on the short stuff. You mentioned, you know, he's known for these kind of spectacular, how did he do it, plays. And I think even when he was making those plays, Mike, as you know, in the first couple of years in the league or so, he wasn't the most accurate guy, which is something dating back to college. And I think why some people were a little bit dubious of him as a prospect. The thing was that accuracy, or inaccuracy rather, was compensated for by the unbelievable plays. So when those plays aren't there, it really stands out. Coupled with terrible ball security in this game, I'm not writing him off yet, right? And I mean, if you're an Eagles fan, look what Nick Foles did or didn't do in Jacksonville. That has to give you some comfort, yeah. I guess. But it is pretty. It's not a great scene.
No, not one bit. And I hesitate. I'll avoid bringing it back to the offensive line because you can do that with a lot of these teams when you see these quarterbacks fall off. But I think with Wentz, yeah. as much as anything, it's just him and Douglas again. Or Doug Peterson, excuse me, what the hell I was doing there, but
no, Douglas. And,
yeah,
let's
Douglas.
Go formal.
Yeah.
Douglas Peterson.
Him and Doug Peterson, just kind of getting back in the same page, because for a while it felt like it was kind of fighting in two directions there. It felt like there was some bit of tension, and then you have all the things fall apart around you. It makes it even harder.
Peterson's also quietly been a little iffy this year. There was that one playing this. It was called a fumble, but it was like a weird delayed handoff. Right? On like, I think they had like 6 or 7 yards to go. And they were losing only by one score at the point. And even Wentz looked pissed that he had to do it and then he fumbled it. And, like, there's just been a few, I don't know. I haven't been super enthralled by him this year either. Next question is from Stephen Connors. Could the Steelers make the playoffs? Did you hear Mike Tomlin's quote today about Duck Hodges?
Mike Tomlin at the microphone at a press conference is perfect in every way. To me, he is perfect. Yes, he hasn't killed us.
Killed us. Mike Tomlin is just over it, right? Like, Mike Tomlin is like, you know, like the dad who's been left home alone with the kids for like 4 days while his wife's on a business trip. And by the end, he's not even trying to make dinner for them. He's just letting them eat out of a cereal box. That's where he is right now with this team. Clearly.
It's so beyond done. And it's so funny because hearing that from Mike Tomlin. So for anyone that doesn't know, I had a nice cup of coffee with the Steelers in training camp in 2013. And I remember Landry Jones was the rookie quarterback that they drafted in the 4th round that year to come in and start to work on being a back route. Bruce Gradkowski was there backing up Ben, but they drafted Landry. And I distinctly remember Mike Tomlin going up to Landry Jones in training camp when we're getting ready for one of the preseason games. And he says, just hand the ball off and make sure you don't turn it over. That is your job. Like, the expectations were so painfully low, and that is now bled out in the public for everyone to hear about Duck Hodges.
Well, who obviously looked like an upgrade coming in, for it's not that hard to be an upgrade over what Mason Rudolph's done this season. But to answer the question about the playoffs, so right now the AFC is really interesting. You got to think the Bills are going to take the 5th seed.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're looking at right now the 6-5 Oakland Raiders, the 6-5 Steelers, the 5-6 Browns, the 6-5 Colts, the 6-5 Titans. So a lot of teams neck and neck. I was looking at all of their schedules. I like the Titans, Mike, but they actually have a pretty difficult schedule. The Steelers have, so you got to think probably you're going to want to win 3 games to even have a shot, right?
Yep.
So the Steelers have the Browns, the Cardinals, the Bills, the Jets, and the Ravens. Not ideal.
No, definitely less than ideal, but I feel like this weekend's the swing vote for them and the Browns. Like, whoever comes out of this weekend with the win is positioned to go on. I think I was looking at Football Outsiders as far as chance to get the second wild card spot in the AFC.
Mm.
The Steelers have the best chance right now, and the Browns
really?
Have the second best chance right behind them, because everyone else is basically going to have to, with their strength of schedule, bank on winning their division. Like, the South is so bunched up behind Houston. I think there's still potential because of how many of them play each other down the stretch here.
That's
like,
true, yeah.
Tennessee, in my mind, is just going to be the pothole. Like, they're not going to make the playoffs, but they might keep somebody else from making the playoffs. And that, I think they play the Colts twice down the stretch, don't they?
The pothole. Yeah, they do. Yeah, the pothole of the AFC South. Tighten up. Yeah, I think you're right. I think, of those teams you just mentioned, the Steelers by far have the best defense. Well, Titans defense, not too bad. But yeah, I think they have the most talented defense. Let me rephrase this. Who would you like to see of those four teams. So Raiders, Browns, Steelers, Titans, Colts, five teams. Who would you prefer to see in the playoffs?
I would probably prefer to see, I mean, I would prefer to see the Browns because at some point we keep still banking on the untapped potential. But if I had to be honest about who could go in and maybe raise a little hell just because of the way they're constructed, Indy probably interests me the most just because the teams at the top of the AFC right now, mostly the Patriots and when we think about the Chiefs, are weak run defenses. So you could see something obscure, a little bit of hell raise because Indy can dominate so much up there.
As a former offensive lineman, are you contractually obligated to support Indianapolis in all matters?
Oh, yeah. It's written into the fine print. Like, we all got together. We had a meeting. We were, you know, busy just destroying soup, salad, and breadsticks endlessly at Olive Garden. And we decided that we would stand them till the end of time.
Practicing your celebrations. Well, that leads me to my next question, which is for you specifically. From Samba 0420. And guys, this is not the last handle with 420 that asked me questions. He wants to know, Mike, if you've ever been called for tripping.
No, I've never been called for tripping. I went with the full-on leg whip. Like, when you're that bad, when you're as bad an athlete as I was, you have to resort to the leg whip because you're desperate. So, never got the trip, but did get the leg whip, and I was just thankful I didn't break my own leg.
Is the leg whip like in Karate Kid, sweep the leg, but like a big man doing it?
100%. 100%. It's just, like, think about how good and, like, you know, effortless that looked. Now picture mine with a ton of effort and looking awful while I'm falling over.
Well, what do you make of the tripping? So I think I tweeted somewhere they had only been seven called. Kevin Seifert had something prior to this weekend. And then, you know, the Cowboys got it twice, including that extremely egregious one on Frederick, I believe. But Seattle also got called for it, too, on Sunday. I mean, what do you make of tripping in general?
I mean, listen, I understand why you call it. Like, plays below the knee like that are always dangerous plays if they're done aggressively. But this one, the one in specifically in question where you have Dante Hightower splitting Zach Martin and Travis Frederick, something like that or some version of that happens so many times in a game that it's not even an outlier situation I can excuse for a ref. It was complete BS as a call there. I don't know how experienced officials who, again, see that, like, pressure up the middle, guys being edged that often and make that call.
Lance UWM says, need your answers. If one of your hands was swapped out for a machine that dispenses five condiments, and they're the only five condiments you can eat for the rest of your life. It's the most excited you've been about a question. Okay, I'll go first.
All right.
Honey mustard. Ooh, big honey mustard person. Ketchup. I know it's controversial, but I just feel like it's, you can use it for so many different things. Gochujang, which is like the Korean chili paste. Soy sauce and blue cheese.
Ooh, wow. Blue cheese, a bit of a wild card in there.
I know.
This is interesting because, like, I feel like I just found us on the opposite side of one of life's oldest debates, which is ranch or blue cheese.
Because
Mike. Because I know ranch
is over blue cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry you had to find out like
most
this.
People would, I feel like if most people were to guess, they would swap that. But what are your five?
So my five would be, I would go hot sauce, ranch, because then you can make ranchy hot sauce, which is a gift. Ketchup, I'm with you on that one. And then here's where I go off the beaten path, and I need your help with this. Now, I was thinking long and hard about this idea, and I have this condiment debate often. Would you consider salsa a condiment or a dip?
It's a dip, I think. Yeah, oh, right. Like, salsa is like hummus. It's like a dip. Also, I have this condiment debate often should be your drop for every show that you do. Andrew Leahy.
Oh, sorry. My last one is syrup.
Oh, I'm sorry. That should be your second drop. And my last one is syrup. Andrew Leahy asks, is there any coordinator that has impressed either of you throughout this season that you had doubts on? Which I think is a very interesting question. Mike, I'll go first.
All right.
I'm going to go with Robert Saleh.
Yeah.
The Niners now infamous defensive coordinator. You feel like now there's like a camera for every broadcast just right on him. Because last year, people were talking about him getting fired. Do you remember that? I mean, I can't remember exactly when the Niners hired him, but they were coming off of and he was with Seattle, obviously, you know, 3 or 4 straight seasons of being a well below average defense. And it felt like, you know, and it's not like people can point to the D Ford and Bosa signings this season. They had talent, especially in particular last year. I was like, how is this defense not better? Right. So it wasn't like they just suddenly got an influence of personnel improvements. They had Buckner and Armstead, and Solomon Thomas struggled at times, Warner, but, you know, the secondary was not great. But obviously the level of improvement from season to season speaks for itself. I had, Barnwell was on ESPN Daily, and we were talking about how the Niners defense was built. He spoke to the fact that, Chris Kocurek from the Dolphins, their D-line coach, came over to San Francisco and convinced Saleh to switch to a wide nine on passing downs to take advantage of the talent that they had to get pressure. So I guess you have to kind of give credit to him for that. But one thing I've noticed watching this Niners defense this season, in particular against, well, there's been a couple games actually where it's jumped out to me, is that the secondary has evolved. It used to just be the Pete Carroll cover three single high look, right? But they've actually added much more, complexity this season, more pre-snap disguises, just sort of rotating looks to give defenses trouble, and it's really paid off for them.
No, I'd agree. And much like when we found strength coaches in college football, we're all better for him being a part of our lives because his celebration game is airtight. And he certainly trains. Mine is interesting. So I thought about this one, and it's a bit of a cop-out, but he is the one calling plays. And I feel like through all of the mess of the preseason, we kind of maybe forgot or just didn't get around to remembering that John Gruden's a really bleeping good play caller. Yeah. Like, watching what he has done with the Oakland offense this year, and I know you were on the camp as well as I, that Derek Carr wasn't as bad as a lot of people purported. We kind of ignored the fact that he did good last season, but to see that, to see Brent, you know, Jacobs work out for them, their running back pick from the first round, their offensive line has quietly been one of the best in the league this year. I've been impressed with John Gruden's return to form on that side of the ball.
Stugatz 42069 asks,
oh my God.
Who, love my listeners, who has a bigger impact, an average quarterback and a great wide receiver, or the reverse? I mean, it's got to be the reverse.
Yeah.
Great quarterback and the average wide receiver is just, well, who's an example of an average quarterback with a great wide receiver right now?
Right now, could you say Baker Mayfield and Odell?
You know, yeah, that was the one that came to mind, but, Baker's been playing pretty good over the last few weeks. He's been playing at an above average level. But yes, earlier in the season, that would be the one. I mean, it's funny, right? I think probably the best example in recent history would be, and the best case you could make that an average quarterback with great talent, it would be Andy Dalton in 2015,
yep.
Right? When he had AJ Green and Marvin Jones on the same team and that very good offensive line and was playing out of his mind. But I think just by and large, we've seen just so many more examples of great quarterbacks who elevate the wide receivers around them.
100%.
Sean McD 15 asks, the Bills, this is from a while back. It's from my iTunes reviews. The Bills opened with 18 pass plays. Brian Daboll said they were passing to set up the run. Does that work? I love now I have the mental image of Sean McDermott posting that comment to ask us about it. Brian Daboll said this. Just want to know what you think, Mina. Sean McDermott, by the way, coach of the year candidate, in my opinion. I want to throw that out there. Yeah, it does. I mean, we talk a lot on this podcast about the benefits of passing out of heavier sets, running out of lighter, like 11, which you spread out defenses, something that we mentioned Cliff Kingsbury has had a lot of success with in Arizona. And the underlying idea is that you want to use your personnel on offense to dictate what defenses do. I mean, someone, I think, really simplified this for me, Mike, when they told me football is just about getting fast guys on slow guys. Like, that's really what it is, right? And you know, when you pass to set up the run, I think, by the way, another thing, sorry, while I'm just on a stream of consciousness, I would love to see more work on the effect. We talk about like how the run doesn't, establishing the run doesn't set up play action. I would love to see more work on the reverse, whether play action helps the run game down the line. But basically the underlying idea is you want to manipulate defenses to do what you want to make the other thing easier down the line.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's almost, and I think Lamar Jackson has kind of made it easier for us to understand all these concepts because it's the same thought process, right? You take a really fast guy and compromise everybody's integrity on the perimeter when you use Lamar as a part of the option run game. So now just apply that same concept to your point, getting fast guys on slow guys. That was the best way I ever had the air raid explained to me. Sonny Dykes is the head coach at SMU now, is one of those Hal Mum disciples, you know, from the Leach coaching tree. And he said, all the air raid is the option with a pass is through the passing game. Like you're trying to put guys in compromising positions in space, and so that just, you know, it flips the field, it does all those things, but that's I think you explained it the best.
So I think this is an interesting question because I actually think it's changed a lot over the last few weeks of the season. MK Gray asks, which team is likely to implode and have a coaching change? So Mike, as I was looking through the teams, I don't think there are going to be that many firings this year. So I'll run through the bad records with you. These are the teams you would think maybe, right? So in the AFC East, you have the Dolphins. No, I think they're going to give Flores another shot.
Yep.
And then the Jets, increasingly, they said no, right? They said Gase is their coach in 2020. Then you've got the Chargers. Don't think that's going to happen. The Broncos, kind of think they're going to stick with Vic. The Bengals. No, it's the Bengals.
Yeah.
The Browns, who a few weeks ago we were talking about, but I think they're going to stick with Kitchens. And then the Jaguars. That would be the team in the AFC that might move on, in my opinion.
Yeah. The only other one that I might put in that list, and I thought about this going into the season just because of the positioning of when they drafted a quarterback and his record before that. Mm. Do we think Pat Shurmur's out of the woods?
Oh, yeah. Well, let's go to the NFC. Yeah,
oh, sorry.
I don't.
Sorry. I forgot.
No, we were
only on the AFC. It's my fault.
That's okay. No, it's okay. I think the Giants and the Skins are both, well, obviously the Skins. No, I don't. I mean, that fan base is really mad at him all the time. For, you know, his play calling, some of the conservative decision making. So I don't. The only case, I think if Jones comes on strong at the end of the season, maybe, because teams tend to not like to split up rookie quarterbacks with coaches they like. But no, I don't. I think Shurmur would be the one. I think everyone in the NFC West is safe. In the NFC North, Matt Patricia?
I was thinking Patricia, like, could the Bears do bad enough down the stretch of the season here where people, like, think about Matt Nagy, or is there still too much goodwill from last year? That's, when we thought about this question and bottoming out, that was the only one I could really think of that maybe supernovaed at the end.
I think he's still safe. Everyone's so clearly blaming the quarterback. You could argue he's not handled that well, but, I imagine he's probably safe. I think the division where you've got a lot of teams that are contenders to make changes is the NFC South. So I do think the Falcons will move on from Dan Quinn, barring some sort of miracle. I don't think the Bucks will move on from Arians. But then the Panthers are an interesting one with Ron Rivera. David Tepper, their owner, has made some kind of murky comments about evaluating things. So that would be another team I think would be a possibility.
Yeah, Tepper is definitely the outlier in this because when you talk to people around Carolina, the love there for Ron Rivera and for Cam Newton, both of whom we could argue may be done in their time in Carolina, are beloved by the people around those organizations in the city. So it's interesting how the infusion of Tepper into that kind of creates some doubt.
Let's stay in the NFC South and take this question from Real Redhead 90. As a fellow Mega Matt Ryan fan, scarily for me, do you agree that the Falcons should draft a quarterback in the next year or two?
Ooh.
This hits hard. Everyone knows I'm a Matt Ryan defender. By the way, recently noticed that Matt Ryan's wife, Sarah Ryan, follows me on Twitter. I think because of all of my videos defending Matt Ryan.
You really worked hard for that
Sarah
follow,
Ryan.
Yeah.
I did like, well, I figured it out because she posted a very funny text exchange with Matt pointing out that he like led quarterbacks in rushing yards one weekend or something. She was like, ooh, you still got it or something. It was funny. So look, he's probably having his worst statistical season in a while, but his worst is still average at worst, right? Again, just statistically and thinking through the quarterbacks in this league. He was awesome against Carolina. He was not his best at all against, Tampa Bay in this last game, but good Lord, the Falcons offensive line looked bad, Mike. And I know I'm a Matt Ryan defender and this could be me making excuses, but they were just getting obliterated. Caleb McGarry, the draft pick, who I don't think you loved going to them, but I'd like to hear more about that. Just honestly, looked like he had never, I mean, it was just a disaster. And it wasn't just him. I mean, Carpenter was terrible, Jake Matthews. So I think as a Falcons fan, that's got to be more dispiriting than anything, just given the amount of capital they've invested in the position, in the line.
Yeah, outside of Alex Mack, there's not a lot you can count on there, and he's certainly starting to get up there. You're right, I wasn't all that high on McGarry coming out of Washington, and we know he had a lot of health things that kept him out through most of the preseason early on. Their other first-round pick in Chris Lindstrom is, I believe, on IR, the guard out of Boston College. So there were a lot of questions up there, but I'm with you. The floor is still high enough for Matt Ryan to where I'm saying if we can get this defense even close to right, like some version of the one we saw in the last 2 weeks before this weekend, then maybe we can get back to a place where Matt Ryan is more than good enough to keep your offense going in the right direction.
Dirk Cutter, but I mentioned they would move on from Quinn. I got to think they're going to move on from Cutter as well. Here's an interesting one. Needles on News asks, great name, which AFC team do the Patriots and Ravens not want to face in the divisional round? So let me rephrase that. What AFC team other than the Chiefs do you think scares either of these teams?
Yeah. I kind of said it before. God, the AFC sucks this year.
Well, it's either the Bills or the Texans, right? I mean, unless I'm
the Bills or the Texans, or I mean, if the Colts obviously aren't in it yet, but they're one of those teams lurking around down there. I don't think anyone's really afraid of the Bills. Like I believe they've improved. Josh Allen has gotten better, but that offense isn't anything I can count on. So I probably have to go to the Texans just because if Will Fuller's on the field, they're a different team. Like they are dynamite then, and
100%.
that can really hurt someone.
Well, it's funny, they're really opposite teams. Like the danger with the Bills is that it's going to turn into like a grinded out sort of slugfest, right? And Josh Allen doesn't turn the ball over. And then the danger with the Texans is the shootout because you don't want Watson, Hopkins, and Fuller operating on all cylinders. I would argue that the grinded out slugfest is probably scarier for certainly a team like the Patriots. Even though, you know, the Texans are more fun to watch. Next question. Balls O'Hardigan. Oh boy. This was asked before the weekend, but I did want to run it by you. Is this upcoming Packers versus Niners game, Sunday Night Football, the best looking head coach and quarterback matchup of all time? Those sideline camera shots are going to be glorious all night long.
It was alarming. Like, as bad as that game was, the views. Boy, the views. I mean, they don't do tall, dark, and handsome as well as these two teams anywhere. We'd have to check with stats and info, but I think historically this might be correct.
Do you think, you know how you mentioned the offensive linemen get together and, you know, you guys make big decisions generally. Do you think like the young head coaches get together and they're like, guys, let's all get the same haircut?
I'm just thankful they didn't.
Except for McVay.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, I'm glad they didn't follow McVay's suit on the haircut or the beard because then we'd be in a lot of trouble.
Don't get me started. Yeah, that sort of baby faux hawk thing. Yeah, no, listen, LaFleur and Shanahan, they know what's up. Although Shanahan has it under the flat brim, which kind of makes him look like an aging skater at all times.
Yeah, well, and now that I've been through secession, like, looks a lot like Kendall. Like, I think you were the one that maybe pointed this out, but it's really hard to ignore.
He looks like Kendall trying to fit in with like a startup, right? Like putting on a flat brim and J's and being like, hello, kids.
Like when he bought those shoes and tried to go acquire that art startup. Yeah.
Bingo. We love Shanahan. At Chris Studies asks, who are the three most compelling current NFL players? Define compelling however you see fit. Okay, so the obvious answer is like Lamar, Wilson, Mahomes, Watson. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I almost want to like throw in like Nathan Peterman was really compelling to me in certain ways. The thing is, like, I also wish I could choose, like, a defensive player, like, Aaron Donald, or, like, the other day when Jadeveon Clowney took over a game, that was really compelling, but you just can't count on that happening on a game-to-game basis.
No, it's been tough, and I think of it, like, selfishly through the lens of sports talk radio, and the two names that were the first ones that I thought of for this were Dak and Carson. Like, they have become that debate that Jameis and Mariota used to be. Just these two guys tied to the hip that we're going to constantly compare until both of them either succeed or wash out of the league. So it'd be those two for me. And Lamar's so hard to ignore. Like, I'm with you. I tried to go through and maybe give some love to my large adult son, Isaiah Wynn, who came back and balled this weekend. God, he was good. But the other three are probably the ones I have to do.
Isaiah Wynn, the most compelling player in the NFL right now. Next question is, I'm told, from Sunmin Kimes. Let's hear it.
I have a question for you. When I make my weekly NFL picks, I place a lot of weight into home field advantage when the point spread is close. Is this a good tactic? Is there any data or study to back this up? And I hope you don't mind me asking second question. If Lenny can have a brother, what would you name him?
Oh, wow.
Why don't you take the first one and I'll take the second one?
All right. Factoring in home field when it comes to a close point spread, I think it depends, right? Like, we understand there are certain places that actually offer you a legitimate home field advantage. Like, you're not going to do that if you're playing out in San Diego or anything crazy like that. But the notion of home field being an advantage was always weird to me just because I liked playing on the road so much more. But I think in the NFL, I don't have statistics in front of me, but I would imagine it bears out pretty strongly in favor of that.
Yeah, especially on Thursday nights. By the way, it's funny, with Seattle, like, they've been, those kinds of norms can change. Seattle's been, like, better on the road this year, so it's not always set in stone. And then there are teams like Minnesota, where Kirk Cousins has just been much better at home. Obviously, domes matter, Breeze and Ryan, that factors in. Now, as far as Lenny, if he had a brother, what would the brother's name be? Brad. I'm going to go with Brad.
Brad!
Chancey Danger asks, what is the best episode of X-Men the Animated Series? I love the one where they first meet Colossus. I am a bit biased as he is my favorite team member. Did you watch X-Men the Animated Series?
I never did. No, as nerdy as I am, this is my secret shame. I never watched it. I know.
It's the best animated show of all time. My brother and I used to like tape them on VHS so we could watch them later. Like, especially during the summer, right, when shows were in reruns. It's just really epic. So I actually went and looked up my favorite episode for you, Chancey Danger. It's hard to overlook anything with Bishop and Cable, the Dark Phoenix saga, the rise of Apocalypse. But I really love an episode called Cold Vengeance. It's a Wolverine, like, feature episode. He's always my favorite X-Men. If you're still listening, I'm sorry. And it's like Wolverine, like, quits the X-Men, and tries to go find, like, I don't know, like, find himself, I guess. He goes to Canada and he gets beaten up by Sabretooth, his arch enemy, and he is rescued by a group of Eskimos. I think we call them Inuits now. And one of the guys teams up with Sabretooth against him. They try to catch him. And then Wolverine eventually rescues the villagers and Sabretooth falls into a river. I looked up a recap on Wikipedia because it's been a long time.
No, I respect that. Not surprising that someone had to go to Canada to remember how to get their ass kicked.
Bill Barnwell, I think you guys know him, asks, Is there a single person who has proposed a solution to the officiating problems everyone complains about every week, and can they be placed in the Hall of Fame?
I mean, you know who...
It's so true.
Ugh.
By the way, it's just the not, like, it is really like nonstop complaining with very little solution other than be better.
Well, it is, but I will say we begin, we go back right to where we started, because I heard Sean Payton come out after that game the other night and he's like, we need a committee for this thing. I'm sick of Al Riveron being the one to decide it. I want a committee in New York to try and figure out the review, at least for the reviews in that one, which I think is a chief part of the complaint, has been the lack of overturned calls on the pass interferences. And he wants to do what Canadian football does and go to the committee for review. And as someone who works avidly in college football, I can assure you that nothing ever goes wrong when you involve a committee.
A lot of the Canadian rules, to be fair, are superior. I think this is a broadcast problem more than an officiating problem. I think we just see too much. You know, it was something I thought of. It wasn't the tripping. It was in Thursday Night Football when Watson fumbled it and then recovered it. And then they, like, didn't show us a bunch of views and everybody was kind of confused and angry. And then they said, no, we looked at it. He recovered or it wasn't conclusive or whatever. Right. People just kind of moved on. Right. Like, when you don't dwell on something and show it to us, like, our, as a society, we're so, pea-sized brain-minded now that we can only work up anger if we're given the time and, like, visuals. This sounds bad, but I think it's kind of true, right? Like, when there's a bad call and then they just move on really quickly, people get over it really quickly.
Oh, absolutely. If we're given the opportunity to freak out about something, we have shown time and time again, we will take that opportunity and run with it. It's a well-earned mark.
D Knapp Jr. asks, you are a coach. Every time at halftime, you have to answer the sideline question with the same statement. For example, we got to improve third downs and stop the big play. What do you say?
Well, what I'd want to say is, just because it would get a great reaction every time, is who else see the leprechaun say yeah, as the famous interview from that news channel did when they saw that leprechaun. But if I had to do like an actual football one, I just want to trigger everyone and I'd say you have to continue to establish the run.
I'm torn between a lot of ball game left, which is always a classic, and saying in the next half, we need to focus on Bofa just for that one halftime reporter who bites, or sideline reporter. Ultimate Gus 90 asks, under what circumstances is it acceptable for someone to switch football team allegiances? I give you right now a total blanket. If you are a Washington football fan, you can switch. No one will hold it against you. Not a single person on earth.
No, yeah, you've been pushed to the limits. Like, I'd say Washington fan. I would have said this a couple years ago about being a Browns fan. Like, my dad having roots in Cleveland. I legitimately have seen the hell that it was for so long. My dad once introduced himself to a friend of mine's parents at high school, and when he told them he was from Cleveland, the other parent apologized. Like, that's how bad it was for a long time just for the city, so I could have understood it then.
This is a good question. IMJ Pizzle asks, what if Cincinnati doesn't take a quarterback in the draft? She mentions Chase Young. And, you know, somebody asked me this on Twitter the other day. Well, what they didn't ask me. They told me I was an idiot for saying that Cincinnati should take a quarterback instead of Chase Young. But it's so hard to answer this outright because it depends on your evaluation of Joe Burrow or, you know, whoever, what kind of quarterback you want them to take, Joe Burrow. Because obviously, like, I think a good example, Mike, is the Browns taking Myles Garrett, right, before they took Mayfield. Because the quarterback who was taken next was Mitch Trubisky that year, 2017. So you look at that and you say, yep, they got the sure thing, the guaranteed player. But then Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, later in the draft, right? So it's like, at what point do you say you just got to throw darts hoping to get a quarterback because the quarterback is ultimately more valuable, which I do think is true, or should you just take a player you view as a sure thing, which may not be a sure thing? You know, there are pass rushers taken at the top of the draft who don't work out.
No, there are, and I think a lot of this is weighted. I know her. I heard you and Bill Barnwell kind of giving context to the idea of what Nick Bosa has done with people's thought processes on this. Like, yes, you took Kyler Murray one, but look what Nick Bosa's done in San Fran. And as Bill and you pointed out, there were so many other things along the way you couldn't have planned for that stacked up to allow Nick Bosa to kind of be the capstone for that unit. Like, if he goes in on a unit where there is a dearth of talent, I don't think he's nearly as effective, and I don't think we're talking about him nearly as glowingly. So I think you can always have more of an effect if you get it right at quarterback than if you get it right at DN, just as a base principle.
The Nick Bosa point's really good, Mike, because I think there's this thought, well, everything has to be perfect for a quarterback to flourish and be good, right? First of all, was not the case with Deshaun Watson. I think, obviously, he had, like, Hopkins and receivers, but it's not like he's had a good offensive line, so he doesn't have to be perfect to make it worthwhile to get a great quarterback. And also, like, with Bosa, it wasn't like he walked into a barren defense and change things. They were ready for him in the same way people call for teams to be ready for a quarterback. Ultimately, I think it obviously does come down to your evaluation of the players, but given the relative value of the quarterback, you lean there regardless of where your team's at, in my opinion. Mitch Weibert asks, is there a movie you lied about seeing then later felt shame for?
Ooh.
So for those who don't know, this is a bit with the Levitard show where I pretend like I've seen movies. And it all started when I pretended like I'd seen Point Break and did a whole segment with Mike Ryan and then later told him I had never seen Point Break. So the shame thing is what makes it interesting because usually I don't care. I'm not ashamed of not having seen a movie. I have one, actually. I pretend like I've seen so many 30 for 30s.
Oh, wow, Mina.
I mean, I've seen some of them, but people will be like, yeah, the two Escobars. I'm like, loved it. A classic. I know it's
they
good.
They did it again. Wait, tell me you've seen, like, The U and, like, the big ones, right?
I've seen The U. What other big ones?
I can't even know if you're telling me the truth. That's the messed up part about
it. I have
this.
Seen The U because they're like, like, the music, you know? And then I've seen the one with the Brian Bosworth one, the Bos, the two, I don't remember what it's called.
I thought you were about to go to the two Bosworths.
Steven Herzog asks, if you had to pick one defensive player in the league to insert as emergency quarterback, who would it be? So this is lucky a great question because most of the players who are not quarterbacks with quarterbacking experience are offensive players, including offensive linemen. There's a few offensive linemen around the NFL who play quarterback in high school, obviously a fair amount of wide receivers, but there's actually very few defensive players, Mike.
Yeah, I was trying to think long and hard about this one. Mostly, I just wanted someone who is either going to go up there and be able to run some version of the option, because now that we've seen parts of it again with Lamar Jackson, I'm kind of enamored with it. Like, for some reason, I don't know, I feel like Luke Kuechly would be like 90% of like the Army or Navy quarterbacks I've seen over the years, where he would just grind tough yards, but he's also boring. I didn't. Do you have a better answer here? Because I'm still trying to workshop
mine.
Well,
you know, it's funny. I thought, I remember I just ran Cam Chancellor a while back, and he actually played quarterback in high school. I think, though, you're right. You're just going to, like, you just want a running back there, basically. Or someone really fast. Like, I might go with, like, a corner, maybe?
Actually,
like, you know?
You know who I put back there, actually? I put Chandler Jones back there just so we remember he exists. Like, he's so good, but it's in this vast wasteland of Arizona defense, so give him a chance to shine.
He has, like, 45 sacks this season. I'm told we have another audio question.
Hi, Mina. This is Chris Golick, Mike's mom. I saw that you and Mike are doing a podcast together today and doing a mailbag, so I thought I would take this opportunity to reach out to you and see if maybe you would be willing to help me. I know you're one of Mike's best friends, and as a mom, he's my last kid who I have to worry about.
Oh, no.
A significant other yet, so I thought maybe as a good friend to him, you would maybe consider doing something like 12 days of dating or something like that with him and try to hook him up with somebody that, you know, maybe he can have some fun with and start a relationship. So, let me know what you think. I'll be listening to the podcast and hope you mention it on there and maybe work something out with Mike. Any help you would give me would be really appreciated. Love your work. Big fan. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Low-key, the most amazing part of that was have some fun with Oh my God.
Mina, can I tell you the saddest thing that happened to me the other day along like the have some fun with line? Is my mom at all, like, obviously most mothers, like, pressure their kids about when am I going to get grandkids. And I said that to my mom one day. I was like, hey, you've, like, stop doing that, lady. She goes, I just want you to find someone to spend time with. I'm like, man, you've lowered the bar that much already?
To spend time with. Oh. Do you think my mom's question about a brother for Lenny was, like, a pointed, like... like a human brother kind of thing.
Oh, wow, man.
Let's take this off the air. Yeah. Okay, we're almost done. Banks is a question really for you, Mike. Why is offensive line... Oh, I never answered your mom's question. If you're a female listener, hit us up at Mina Kimes. And, you know, I'll hook it up. Wants you... At Michael Jr., please ask Mike, why is offensive line the thinnest position in the NFL? Is there a team that has high quality depth?
Ooh. Yeah, so this is interesting. I think it's the thinnest in the NFL right now because we're kind of at a crossroads with how the position is scouted in the NFL. Field Yates one time told me that what the first thing you're taught as a scout is we draft traits and not production. And I think offensive line, given the time constraints of the position right now in this current CBA, all the things that we've documented from college on up, kind of dictates that you need to look a little bit more towards production, like places that are consistently going to coach technique that transfers sooner than later, instead of these great athletes that we're trying to convert. Think of the hell that you lived in for a long time under Tom Cable's reign as he tried to convert D linemen to offensive linemen. As far as a team with quality depth, shout out to the 49ers, who have dealt most of this year without their starting tackle tandem. They are the only offensive or the only team in the NFL that have three different line combinations that have played 175 snaps or more. And the team, the unit that's played the least amount of snaps together of that is their starting lineup. So it's been impressive.
It's wild what they've done. It's funny, in the beginning of the season, I probably would have said Philadelphia, right? But it's absolutely the Niners, no question at all. Connor just wants to know what my concerns are for Seattle heading into Monday. So they're on Monday Night Football against Minnesota. Well, Connor, my concern is that they're playing a team with a struggling secondary and they might not throw the ball. Seattle just quickly, the defense has looked a lot better. Over the last few weeks, they've really rounded. They've just, I think it moved around a couple of guys in the secondary. Quandre Diggs has been a real contributor at safety. It's allowed Bradley McDougal to go back to more his, I think, natural comfort position. Not roaming in the back there like that. And, the pass rush has shown up as well. So I'll go with that. I'll go with Pete Carroll. J-Mall, last question before we get to Lenny's questions. If you could replace a coach of any division leader with a coach of any last place team, who would you pick? Ooh. I mean, letting Flores coach the Patriots would be nice, kind of like in a make-a-wish situation.
I want this so badly for you. Like, come back.
Yeah. I kind of want to do Zach Taylor to the Ravens just to... Well, no, I don't want to do that.
Well, I heard you
coaching the Chiefs
is
hilarious. Right?
Well, I said, I heard you started to say that one just because I feel like Fangio's head would explode watching the defense try and operate in Kansas City.
Oh, that reminds me. I skipped a question that was important. The mention of Kansas City, I got to give credit to who asked the question, of course. Okay, Alan Corridor. Which NFL player or coach do you think would make the best mall Santa? Who would be the worst? So obviously I was thinking of Andy Reid. That's the obvious choice for a coach. The worst, it's got to be Belichick, right?
Oh, he'd be terrible. Like sitting there mumbling. Him or like Bill O'Brien, because I feel like Bill O'Brien would get weirdly frustrated with the kids and start yelling at them. Like it would get contentious.
Mm. Who would be the funniest Miles Santa and why is it obviously Mike Tomlin?
Oh, give me this gift.
Jason Garrett too would also be amusing. But yeah, it's Andy Reid's destiny. All right. So I'm going to ask... you know what? Mike, why don't you ask Lenny these questions? I'm sending them to you right now. And then if you have a fourth question, you can ask it as well, and we can end there. And as promised, I will answer them on behalf of Lenny in his voice.
All right, here we go. We have questions for Lenny. This first one was finding a nickname is hard. 12 asks, is Lenny single?
Who is this, Mike's mom? No, I'm not single. I'm married to the game. Sorry.
Yeah, no, listen, Lenny takes the game very seriously. I figured that game is fetch, by the way, but married to the game. All right, the next question comes from Taco Tansel, who tweets in, who is Lenny's favorite player, in parentheses, other than Bark Avius Mingo?
Bobby Wagner.
It's a fair point. Obviously, mom's influence felt strongly there. Let's see. At KramerP33 asks, what are Lenny's favorite and least favorite treat flavors?
All of the flavors except ranch. I'm not a heathen.
Okay. Wow. Feeling a little judged right now. I can tell Lenny's been listening. All right. Well, that brings me to my last question then. And now I'm a little nervous about this one. So this is my question for Lenny. And based off that, I don't know if I'm going to like the answer. Lenny.
Oh, boy.
Who's your favorite Mina Kimes show featuring Lenny Guest?
Oh.
And why is it not Dominique?
Boy. Mike, since it's Thanksgiving, I will just give you the gift of knowing that it's Dominique.
Damn it!